The Kentucky General Assembly is back in session, and there are a lot of issues on the table, including health care, charter schools, and the state budget. A new governor is expected to bring many changes to the Commonwealth. Since the election, we've seen some Kentucky Democratic legislators defecting to the Republicans, leaving the state's House with a slim Democratic majority. It seems to be shaping up to be a very dramatic General Assembly session. On this week's Eastern Standard, we'll discuss what to expect during the legislative session. We'll talk about the pension system, labor, education, and other issues. We're interested in your questions, comments, or stories. What do you hope passes through the legislature this session? What do you think about what is to come, and how do these issues affect you? Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment to the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Another start to the calendar year, and this is our first Eastern Standard of 2016. And the beginning of the year marks another convening of the Kentucky General Assembly with a new governor, Matt Bevin, as well as many Kentucky Democrats defecting to the Republican Party, and numerous large issues on the table for discussion. It's shaping up to be an interesting legislative season. We're going to discuss the 2016 General Assembly during today's program, and we're hoping that you'll be part of the program. But with us to discuss the topics and help kick off the conversation are Jack Brammer, a reporter for the Lexington Herald Leader, and Jack is on the line with us from Frankfort this morning. Jack, thank you for being with us.
Good morning, John. Glad to be with you.
Stu Johnson is WEKU's very own general assignment reporter, I guess we would call him. But, of course, during this season of the year, spends quite a bit of his time in Frankfort. And Stu, likewise, is in Frankfort this morning. Good morning, Stu.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
And here in the studio, Jason Bailey, executive director for the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, based in Berea. Jason, welcome once again to the WEKU studios. Very quickly, Jack and Stu are journalists, so we assume that they, are coming at this from an objective or a balanced point of view. But as with the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, your organization has a viewpoint and has an agenda of your own, I guess.
Yeah, that's right, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me. We're a research organization and an advocacy organization that works on a variety of issues. But our overall perspective is we want to see an economy that works for all Kentuckians, and that requires in part investing in things like education and healthcare and infrastructure and other things that will grow our economy.
In the first segment of our show, we want to focus on what has been introduced and what's actually happening today. The program, of course, is live on Thursday. This would be the third day of the 2016 General Assembly. So let's kick off with a story from our Capitol reporter, Ryland Barton, and then we'll get to Jack Brammer and Stu Johnson with a summary of what's actually going on right now. But a bill that would allow Kentuckians to clear certain felony convictions from their records is gathering support in the legislature. Capitol reporter Ryland Barton says that measure still has hurdles to clear.
Republican Governor Matt Bevin is on board to pass the bill, along with a coalition of Kentucky's largest chambers of commerce and social justice organizations. But Senate Majority Leader Damon Thayer, who has long opposed the bill, says he's still wary of the legislation.
I want to make sure that the level of crime and the time since it was committed are acceptable before I'm going to commit to voting for it.
Under the bill, Kentuckians could expunge a Class D felony conviction 5 years after a sentence is completed. Those convicted of violent crimes or sex crimes would be excluded. The issue has long been a priority for Democrats in Frankfort. The State House has passed the bill by wide margins in recent years. I'm Ryland Barton in Frankfort.
And with that bit of relatively current news, we turn to Jack Brammer and Stu Johnson. Gentlemen, you're both there in Frankfort. Talk about what's going on this week, and among this felony expungement bill, what other bills have been introduced so far? Should we start with, why don't we start with Jack, because you're our guest.
Thank you. The expungement bill was introduced on a Wednesday, and it has two heavy hitters supporting it. As Ryland said in his news piece, it has had some problems in the Republican-controlled Senate, but you have the Republican Governor Matt Bevin, who backed it at a news conference this week, And the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce has gotten on board with this legislation. The chamber has had some concerns about it because what liability, if any, business people might have if they hire somebody who had committed a felony. But this particular legislation would let people convicted of Class D felonies, that's nonviolent crimes, whose maximum sentence is 5 years in prison, they could ask the court to clear their records as if this crime had never happened. And I believe, Stu, that one of the sponsors of the bill, Representative Daryl Owens, a Democrat from Louisville, had said this could affect about 94,000 Kentuckians who are looking for jobs. And the business community will tell you that they are looking for people to fill jobs. And so it seems like this bill has more momentum behind it than I've ever seen in a legislative session.
Well, let me ask you this, Jack. Is this bill a reaction to the actions? Okay, Governor Beshear, before going out of office, issued an executive order that restored voting rights for felons, I guess, across the board. And then Governor Bevin, soon after taking office, reversed that executive order. Is this bill the response to all of that activity?
Well, this bill, the expungement bill, is actually separate from the action that Governor Beshear took and then what Governor Bevin took when he came into office. There is a question about this expungement bill. If your entire felony record is cleared, it doesn't appear anymore, would that restore voting rights for that individual? The sponsor said it would. Some others said, well, that's still questionable. So I think it would require another bill if we get to the situation where Kentuckians would be allowed to vote even if they've had a prior felony and have served their entire sentence.
And am I correct that Kentucky is only one of two states that does restrict felons from voting?
That's my understanding, yes. Mm.
So what else has been introduced so far that will be major issues in the coming weeks? So what are what's come out of the House, what's come out of the Senate so far?
Well, you have about 100 bills that have already been filed in the House, and this is just day three of the General Assembly. And you have nearly 200, about 100 in the Senate, nearly 200 in the House. The House has 100 members to the 38 in the Senate. Probably the biggest package of bills was introduced by Senate Republicans who control that chamber. They unveiled 13 priority bills. They say it's their priority for this session. They designated Senate Bill 1, and that designation is reserved for their top bill, the most interest in it. And it would eliminate the controversial Common Core education standards for Kentucky schools. These standards went into effect about 6 or 7 years ago, and now they just want to redo how Kentucky schools assess their students and try to reduce the number of teachers who just teach so that the students can perform well on these tests. The Senate Republicans don't like this. This is going to be a controversial bill. I've talked to a few teachers today, Stu, and they're saying, how come the legislature changes these standards to assess students? They seem to change it every few years, and you get used to something, and then all of a sudden they pull the rug out from underneath them. So it's going to be a controversial issue, just how Kentucky teaches their students, what standards are set.
Don't want to ignore Stu Johnson and our other guest, Jason Bailey, but am I correct, Jack, that you're not going to be able to remain with us for the entire hour?
I could be about the first part, and I'm interested to hear what Jason has to say. The most important bill, I think Stu would agree, is the budget, and that's the two-year spending plan for the state. And circle on your calendar January 26th. That's when Governor Bevin will introduce his spending plan, and the legislature will start addressing that. And I know Jason is very interested in that.
And when is the State of the Commonwealth address?
He's going to tie in the budget and the Commonwealth address on the same day. That's going to be a very busy day besides the budget. the State of the Commonwealth address. That's also the filing deadline for our candidates in this year's state elections.
So this is all January 26th?
Yep, big day.
Sounds like it. Mm-hmm. Stu?
Yeah, John, I tell you, I thought that if I could just take a couple of minutes to set the scene, I'm actually over in the Capitol Annex, separate building from the state capitol, where the majority of the legislative committee meetings are held. And it's interesting, this morning it was a little more active here than I first anticipated, in that there is, every session, a mandatory ethics training. And state lawmakers are required to attend that. They had sessions this morning for lobbyists and LRC employees, mostly a lot of young people involved in that. The young people coming in are helping as interns. So now, we're a little bit quarter after 11 or so, and at noon is a committee meeting down the hall, Health and Welfare Committee, where they have about five bills, I think, on the agenda today. Noticed, Jack, that not surprisingly, that for discussion only. So there are not committee votes planned today on those four bills, and they're dealing with issues of domestic violence. There's a Medicaid waiver bill up and colon cancer screening among the bills being heard today. But I was reminded of former state senator Tim Philpott, who served here years ago. He's now a family court judge in Lexington. And one of the points he made was that he felt that every bill filed should be voted on in committee, because that's not always the case. Certain bills are sometimes held in committee for the session. Another point he made was that if this legislature was to spread out its work a little more evenly throughout the session, you could give more attention to certain issues. Because what tends to happen, and Jack and I have been here for years and years, is that this is typically, in terms of committee action, kind of, let's say, very deliberate off the start here. And then things really get cranking as you go throughout the session. Now, a year ago, roughly, the state Senate passed some bills the first week, and Damon Fair, the Senate Majority Leader, said that from the, I guess it was a couple days ago, actually, that he said that in January, the way he put it, that the Senate still plans to do heavy lifting in January. Whether or not bills are moved as quickly as last year, I kind of think they won't move as fast as last year.
Stu, I'm going to interrupt because we need to take a break in a moment. And if Jack Brammer is going to leave us, or we're going to lose him, I want to make sure Jack gets a few final words in here in terms of what to expect in terms of the next couple of weeks as the 60-day session gets underway.
Real quick, there'll be more bills filed, but I totally agree with Stu that we won't see major action on bills until House and Senate members know who their opponents are going to be in this year's elections, and we won't know that until the deadline, January 26th, for candidates to file. And even to be more pessimistic, we may not even know the outcome of some major pieces of legislation until March the 8th.
All right, Jack, thank you so much. I really appreciate your being with us. We'll check back in with you during this session. Jack Brammer of the Lexington Herald Leader. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Our first show of 2016, focusing on the 2016 General Assembly, underway this week. Our show live on Thursdays. And this would be day three of the 60-day session. We're interested in hearing from our listeners as well as our guests discussing the plans for the General Assembly, the actions that are likely to occur. We're interested in knowing what is on your mind, what matters to you, what issues do you think should be considered, what do you think about what is being introduced so far. And we're going to come back to a review and move forward a little bit with what is actually already on the docket, as it were, for the General Assembly. But our phone number, 800-621-8890. You can write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. After the show, for the most part, you might want to post some comments, reactions on the Facebook page. But please feel free to get on board with your questions, your comments, your stories, issues that are on your mind regarding the 2016 Kentucky General Assembly. 800-621-8890. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Jack Brammer of the Herald Leader needed to move on, but Stu Johnson, WEKU reporter, and Jason Bailey, Executive Director for the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, are still with us. And let me turn back to Stu for just a couple of minutes here, Stu, and if we can briefly, as quickly as you're able to do so, summarize a few more of the major issues that are out there. Jack Brammer told us about the Common Core bill that's being introduced. The budget, of course, will be a major issue. And I understand that, that 100 bills have already been filed within the Senate and a couple hundred in the House. Kind of a proportional number there because of the size of those bodies. What are some that jump out in terms of the significance for you, Stu Johnson?
Well, John, I tell you, quite honestly, there are a lot of bills filed over here, and they don't all get heard. But I guess, what's gotten some attention, I don't know if Jack specifically mentioned this one or not, but it has, in the last year, gotten a lot of attention, is the marriage license issue, following up on the very highly publicized case in Rowland County where Kim Davis, the clerk there, refused to grant licenses to gay couples. And, the Governor Bevin, an executive order that which in essence said that the name of the clerk would not need to be on the form. But there is a bill that's been filed. That was one of the ones mentioned as well on the Senate floor yesterday when this list of priorities was given out, talked about. And so there's basically, in essence, a bill that would codify that, codify or, make it into law, the executive order, more or less reinforce. So that's one that will get a lot of discussion along with. So there are, that's what sessions tend to be, a mixture of fiscal, financial matters, and social issues. And there's some in between as well and some other matters, but that's a pretty good focus of the bills that come before lawmakers. And so although this session there is, and Jason will be getting to this in great detail, I'm sure, in just a few minutes about the pension issue, because it's a big budget matter in terms of finances for these, concerns, obviously, of the retirees of the state, the teacher retirees, the teachers, and then also state workers. But just the amount of money that is needed, called for, to try to remedy that situation, that the budget just got a major amount of focus. But then there are quite a few social issues that come up as well.
Let me turn to Jason Bailey, Executive Director for the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy. And Jason, yes, you're hearing the social issues. I understand there's a bill that's been also introduced to cutting public funding for facilities that provide abortions. I guess we would call that the Planned Parenthood bill, perhaps. Social issues, and then we've got major issues with funding. We've got the budget. We've got the teachers and other retirement systems. I guess, how many retirement systems does the state actually operate? A number of them.
Well, it depends on how you count them, but we have a teacher system. There's the state workers system. There's a county workers system. There's the state police have their own.
Aren't they all underfunded, or is any of them healthy and strong?
I believe the legislators' plan is in good shape, most of them are in pretty bad to varying degrees, but of difficulty.
Talk about that difficulty. What's the issue there?
Well, these plans have been around for a very, very long time, and they've worked quite well, actually. Until recently, and basically what has happened is that as we've had some broader economic difficulties, as other budget priorities have come up, as we've sort of not been as a state willing to look at our tax system, the legislature and the governor have sort of have begun to skip payments essentially to these pension systems, These plans work quite well as long as you pay your bills. But sort of like as an individual, if you don't pay your debts on time, the interest compounds and the amount owed increases. And that's essentially what's happened with our pension plans. You know, about 20 years ago, we started skipping making the full payments to state workers system. In the teacher system, ever since 2009, we have not made the full payments. And when you add on to that a recession and the drop in the financial markets associated with that, you end up with a really big bill that we are now facing as a state. You know, we're talking about with the teacher system, you know, $500 million more per year is needed to over the next basically 30 years to make that sound. And to put that in the context, $500 million is about half of what the state puts into the entire university and community college system in Kentucky. So we're talking about big amounts of money that need to be found or generated in order to make that system sound and make sure that the teachers who've earned these benefits and legally and morally are obligated to receive the benefits actually that they're there at the end of the day.
Now, one of the other major issues floating out there is the, of course, Governor Beshear received a lot of recognition for establishing the Connect Health Exchange as part of for lack of a better term, Obamacare, based on the Affordable Care Act. And, of course, we know people may not always know the terminology correctly, but that has become a big issue. And Governor Bevin campaigned against the Connect system and the system that Beshear put in place, as well as the Medicaid expansion. Can you explain, Jason, the difference between those two programs and where it looks we're going under the Bevin administration?
Yeah, well, you know, the difference between those two systems are connected. They're sort of they work together. But Connect is essentially is both the portal through which you access health insurance, either through the expansion, as well as the state-based insurance exchange. When Obamacare passed, it created an opportunity for states to set up their own private insurance exchanges, which would give more people access to the private insurance market who couldn't get it through their employer or couldn't afford individual coverage. States had the option of setting up their own exchange or going to the federal exchange. Kentucky set up a state exchange, and it's been a very successful exchange. In fact, it's been a model that other states and the federal exchange have looked to sort of improve their website and improve the way that people can access. And then another component of the Affordable Care Act was the expansion of Medicaid, which the Supreme Court, in their ruling about the Affordable Care Act, essentially gave states the option of choosing to expand. Kentucky chose to expand, and that has given about 425,000 Kentuckians access to Medicaid, low-income Kentuckians who didn't have that before. And so they're getting insurance through Connect, but they're getting Medicaid when they're under the expansion. So that's basically the system that's been set up in Kentucky.
And I was going to say, Governor Bevin made an announcement, right, about how he wanted to proceed, I guess, related to the Medicaid system just last week.
That's right. And Governor Bevin's proposal is to apply for a waiver for the Medicaid expansion. And what that means is that he wants to change the Medicaid expansion in ways that would need the federal government's approval. The federal government is paying 90% plus, but eventually 90% of the cost. So they would need to go along with any changes. But he is wanting to make changes to the Medicaid program that would essentially, the sort of ideas he's talking about are what Indiana has done, which introduce premiums, copays, and other costs that people on the on Medicaid expansion would have to pay that they don't have to pay now. There's some challenges from our organization's point of view around that. We're talking about very low-income people. The research suggests that in a lot of cases, if you start doing that, people just won't get coverage or they won't use the coverage they have. And we may not see the a maintenance of the huge health coverage gains that we've had under Medicaid expansion if we go down that road. But there's a lot to figure out. It'll take months and months for them to come up with a proposal. There'll be a public comment period, et cetera, until we get to that point.
What about the governor's intentions to pull the plug completely on Connect and revert back to the federal health system?
Well, you know, to be honest, John, that's a little of a mystery to to me now. There's been no public announcement around that. The law was that the state is supposed to give 12 months notice to the federal government if you're shifting to the federal exchange. Some say that would have need to have been done by the end of December. There was no announcement in the press conference or any public statement by the new governor that he has indeed made that notification to the federal government. As of now, Connect, of course, is still open. It's open for this open enrollment period, which goes to the end of January. But we're just not clear, and I don't know if Stu's got any information on that recently, but we're not clear at this point as to whether Connect will still be operating next year as it has this year.
Stu Johnson.
Yeah, no. As I'm listening, Jason, I'm in the same situation or, I guess, same assessment that there hasn't been anything formal, and so it's still questionable at this point.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. WEKU reporter Stu Johnson is in Frankfurt this morning, as he's going to be quite a bit over the next couple of months. The 60-day 2016 General Assembly session is underway this week. Jason Bailey, Executive Director of the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, is with us in the studio. And we're previewing the General Assembly, and we're interested in your questions, your comments, your reactions to the start of this legislative session. We have a change in administration in terms of the governor's office, Governor Bevin, having taken office about a month ago. And we're interested in your reactions at 800-621-8890. You can send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. One of the questions focusing out there, former Democratic State Treasurer Jonathan Miller, now an attorney with Frost Brown Todd, said Governor Bevin's budget will be the state's first insight into what kind of governor he's going to be. Talk about that. What do we expect? And I guess, as Jack Brammer tells us, we're going to see that budget, and that it's going to be introduced as part of the governor's State of the Commonwealth address later this month.
Yeah, January 26th, we will get the governor's budget proposal. You know, he hasn't said a lot about the specifics of what will be in that plan. He has signaled or suggested that it will be a very austere budget. And again, looking at the budget situation, looking at the revenue coming in, looking at what we owe in pension contributions and other just basic costs that, you know, around corrections or around growth in students in the K-12 system, et cetera, I think that there is a huge gap that the legislature is facing. So he has suggested there will be a very austere budget. What that means exactly is not clear. You know, the gap has to be closed, and there's basically three ways to do that. One is to continue to cut programs and services. The challenge around that is we've had 15 rounds of budget cuts since 2008. About $1.7 billion has been cut out. So where do you make those additional cuts? So that's one option. The second option is to continue to delay paying what we owe on our pensions, which is a way that we've been dealing with this problem. That will just make the problem grow if we do that. And the third option is to look for additional revenue. And, you know, that is something I think we're going to have to get to as a state, but there's been no suggestion, the governor so far, that he will talk, that will be part of his plan.
Right to work, charter schools, those are a couple of issues out there. Has anything been introduced so far related to right to work?
Well, right to work was part of the Senate's 13 priority bills that Jack mentioned earlier they introduced yesterday. That was one of their priorities that was put out. There was not a charter school bill filed. My understanding is that a charter school bill will be filed, but later in the session. That's probably an issue that's going to be debated quite a bit this session. Governor Bevin appointed Hal Heiner, one of his opponents in the primary, who is a big charter school proponent, to the Secretary of Education and Workforce Development cabinet post. So that's likely to come up and to be heavily debated, as it has in the past. And right to work, I think that these issues are issues that have not seen favor in the House. And I think as long as the Democrats continue to control the House, I don't think that we will see right to work or charter schools as proposed move forward.
We're going to come back to some of the issues in just a few moments, but we do want to remind our listeners that our phone number is available. Our line is open. This is Eastern Standard, an interactive program discussing the 2016 General Assembly, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. No question is too simple or too obvious. Please feel free to get on board. 800-621-8890 or wekueasternstandard@gmail.com or send a tweet at wekuest. We're talking about the Democratic majority in the House that has slimmed to, a four-vote, four-seat margin right now, and the concerns that the House may flip in the next election, or the concerns that the Democratic majority or influence over that body is going to be really made ineffective. Jason Bailey, how do you feel about that? What are the prospects for a continued balance between the Republican Senate and the Democratic House?
Well, I think the margin now is 50 to 46, and there are four open seats that will be for which there will be elections on March 8th, as Jack mentioned. That probably means that a lot may not happen until the outcome of those elections is realized. Two of those
who are elected, will they take office immediately?
They'll take office immediately
and join in this session.
That's right. They'll join in this session. And two of the seats were held by Republicans. Two of the seats were held by Democrats previously. And so, you know, that will be a hard fought battle on both sides to determine who controls those. Republicans would have to pick up all four seats to have a tie. In the House, it's not entirely clear what would happen if there's a tie. There was you know, some discussion of that, even not specifically about that, but about who's Speaker of the House for how long on the first day. But so I think that, you know, it's probably not likely to flip during the session, but it could happen. You know, I think the next election will play a big role in terms of whether we become an entirely Republican controlled state or we continue to have be a state with a divided government. I mean, Kentucky is unique in having divided government and actually in having a Democratic chamber. We're the last state, I believe we are, besides Virginia, the last state in the South that still has a Democratic control of a portion of government.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. The 2016 General Assembly is our topic on this week's program. 800-621-8890. We're live on Thursday morning, and we'd love to hear from you with your question, your comment, your reactions to what you're hearing so far about the 2016 General Assembly. 800-621-8890. WEKUEasternStandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. That number once again, 800-621-8890.
It's 11:39. Eastern Standard continues until noon on listener-supported 88.9 WEKU.
Programming on WEKU is made possible in part by contributing listeners and by Eastern Kentucky University and its Environmental Sustainability and Stewardship Minor Program, focusing on linking the four E's of environment, economics, equity, and education to students' major and career plans. Information at green.eku.edu.
For years, Kate Blanchett was signed on to star in the movie Carol. It's a complex love story between two women set in the 1950s, and it's based on Patricia Highsmith's novel, first published as The Price of Salt.
It's the slippery sexuality and morality that is so attractive, I think.
Kate Blanchett on Playing Carol later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tune in to All Things Considered this afternoon from 4 till 7 on 88.9 WEKU. We'll see mostly sunny skies today, highs in the upper 40s.
It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're discussing the 2016 General Assembly in Kentucky, and you are invited to be part of our live program on this Thursday morning, 800-621-8890. Send an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Or send a tweet at WEKUEST. Do you care about what happens in Frankfurt during the next 57 days? what affects you? What are the issues that affect you that have been considered? What are issues that you wish would be addressed? Are there some things out there that you think, gosh, those folks, we elect them and send them to Frankfurt, and they never bother to deal with the issues that are on my mind? So how do you feel that elected officials in our Commonwealth could be more effective and more responsive to the voters? What do you think about, again, what has been proposed and the focus on social issues versus the budgetary and financial matters? 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Let me come back to this issue of there's been a lot of publicity to the defections of Democrats to the Republicans. Can you summarize for us, Jason Bailey or Stu Johnson, both of you, Stu, please feel free to chime in terms of what has actually occurred there. The governor's appointed, one or two people to positions that essentially took them out of the General Assembly, and some would see that as those as moves to obviously to help water down the effectiveness of the Democrats.
Yeah, I don't know if the if there's a common element to each of those. You know, I don't want to necessarily expunge the motivations of individuals. You had one person who accepted an administrative law judge position who had already sort of wanted to move out of the legislature and, I believe, take care of her ailing mother in the past. You had another legislator, Representative John Tilley, who took the cabinet post in Justice and Public Safety. He's an individual who's worked a lot on those issues in the past. You did have two Democrats switch parties, Representative Denny Butler and Representative Jim Gooch. To some extent, there's probably, a shared ideology, at least with Representative Gooch, to the Republicans that may explain part of that. Some folks may be reading the writing on the wall and thinking that the change is inevitable and they want to be to get some advantage from it. I don't know necessarily what all the motivations are. I do think that if the chamber entirely flips, you will see in Kentucky what you've seen in states like North Carolina and Kansas, where this has happened before, where there will be a battery of legislation that passes very quickly that's been held up for years, and we will be a much different state as a result. You will likely see big tax cuts geared towards people at the top. You will see likely restrictions on abortion rights. You will see weak efforts to weaken unions. Those are sort of some of the core priorities of the Republicans in the Senate, and you will likely see those things pass and become law if and when that happens.
Those are among the 13 items already introduced.
Some of those are among the 13, or have been talked about in other contexts.
Stu Johnson, you speak with Republicans and Democrats every day. What's the mood among the Democrats? Is there a sense of defeatism or a sense of ability to overcome these challenges to their role in state government?
John, I don't know. And I say that because, and I guess I'd say that and add this, that, I've been over here covering the legislature for a long time and, in essence, have always felt like, and I do to this day, that there are lots of pressing issues that affect each one of us every day. And, you know, we touched on some of them already. I mean, I'm just thinking here as we're discussing this hour that, you know, the budget reaches so many different ways. I mean, you're talking about everything from corrections to Medicaid to healthcare to education. I mean, these things that are very day to day. And then the politics of it is so hard to assess. And quite honestly, that's something that I have never tried to really, get a handle on, because it can be frustrating I think that can be a frustrating point for a lot of people is how politics affect actions and with all these big issues.
Well, and the nature of politics is one of negotiation and collaboration and agreement to work together on things. Does that all change? Certainly, on the federal government level, we got to a point where there was nothing occurring any longer because of a certain opposition to the administration. It seems that in Kentucky, there's been generally a lot of collaborative work. Jason Bailey, is that going to disappear?
Well, I think there has been collaborative work on smaller issues. I think the bigger issues that both parties want to see move, and those are quite different. And I think there has been a kind of a detente on that over the last 15 years, in the sense there hasn't been action on that. I mean, we can come together. We can pass. We can increase the dropout age 2 years. We can do some legislation around heroin and things. But when it comes to sort of fixing our tax system or doing big things on education, we haven't done that for decades, actually. So I think that ever since the parties, we had divided government. So I think that, if the Republicans control the House at some point, yeah, I mean, I think that they are likely to push their own agenda very, very strongly, and we probably won't see a lot of cooperation. But it sort of depends on how people read the politics at that point in time.
I mean, there's been so much energy toward the marriage license issue and the same-sex marriage overall. The marriage license bill, in reaction to the governor's executive order, and there are those who claim that the governor did not have the right to take the action that he did. Governor Beshear said he wouldn't take such action to remove the names of county clerks from marriage licenses because he didn't have the authority to do that. Is that going to become a focus and derail us from other important issues that need attention while we're debating social issues on which we're likely to never come to a 100% agreement?
Stu, I don't know if you want to weigh in on that one. My understanding, the Senate is sort of proposing to codify what the governor did. I haven't heard the House raise objections to doing that. So I don't know that particular bill around the clerks will be a hot button. But I do think some of the other issues, for example, restricting abortion rights, has always been something that's been stopped in the House. And that, that will continue to be the case.
Here's Stu, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I might add here that I guess a couple of points. One is that I did ask Senate Majority Floor Leader Damon Thayer that with the, I guess you'd call it the political makeup as it is in the House and the uncertainty about the special election coming up, and then you can look to the fall election and just what the makeup will be. A question I had for him was, this is something I like to pursue with House Majority Floor Leader Rocky Atkins as well, is will there be more entrenchment of sides, with this such close, does that mean that each side's going to dig in politically more than ever? And, we'll see. Because Jason kind of alluded to this, but in terms of collaboration, yes, it has happened from time to time. A lot of times it doesn't happen. And then break, go away from the session, only to come back in a special session, which has happened many times over the years. So, we'll just have to see how things play out. And it is early. It's early in the session. And there's often optimism, or at least expressed optimism, about that these things can, these are such, for instance, the pension matter, what you tend to hear from Republicans and Democrats is that it's so big a matter that there'll be a way to reach, not maybe a solution, but at least a phased-in approach to address that.
Let's go to a listener. Pat from Bourbon County is on the line. Pat, thank you for calling 800-621-8890 and being part of this week's Eastern Standard. Go right ahead.
Well, I've been hearing a lot about the problem with the pension funds. Nobody ever, if we say maybe the one possibility would be to find some more money, we don't just find it. The way the state gets money mostly is through the taxes. But is anybody seriously considering raising a tax or some additional tax, for example? How much good would it do to, say, raise the sales tax by 1 cent or 2 cents or something? We owe the money. We've got to pay it. And borrowing money to pay the money you already pay what you owe, that doesn't seem to be a very sound idea. I feel like we need to come up with the money, and I don't know any other way to do it than some kind of tax.
Pat, I think that you're exactly right in the sense that that is where the conversation has to eventually go. You know, that there's no way to come up with the amount of money that we owe to the pensions from cutting other services and programs, and we're not just going to find it along the side of the road somewhere. There's been a political reluctance to face that problem. We have, though, plenty of options out there. You know, we've had many studies and commissions over the years. I was on the one that Governor Beshear appointed in 2012, and we came up with a tax plan that would have raised enough money to about $650 million, which would have been enough to sort of address this problem and have a more sustainable stream of revenue in the future so that we can pay for our schools and our higher education institutions and other things that kind of are important to the state. But there's been a reluctance to address that. You mentioned the bonding issue, which is going to be House Bill 1, which is a proposal to issue bonds, borrow money to put into the system. And that is, you know, that might be something that might be a part of a plan. But ultimately, all it does is sort of provide a bridge to and give you a few years to come up with the money through tax revenue to pay for it. So we have to head there as a state. We have to look at the options, and we have to talk about what's fair. You know, and if we don't, the hole will continue to be dug deeper, and the problem will get even bigger and become, you know, unsurmountable at some point. So,
Pat, thank you for your call. 800-621-8890, our number. A few minutes remaining in this week's Eastern Standard. Now, we do have a number of emails. Jason Bailey and Stu Johnson are here with us. This email came in from Roseanne, and she asks, has Governor Bevin considered privatizing the legislative and judicial pension systems, especially since the 2005, quote, greed bill, HB 299, allowed our part-time legislators to disproportionately fatten their own retirements by double and triple dipping into other state retirement systems and retire quite lucratively. So privatizing the legislative and judicial systems. Jason, you said earlier that those are the systems that are solid, on solid financial standing?
Well, they are, and there's a lot of hard feelings about the bill that you mentioned that provides pretty large pensions for legislators that move over into executive or judicial branch jobs. You know, I think that that has been a target for public anger and concern ever since the legislature did it, and because that plan is well funded. I do have to say, from a practical point of view, that plan is very small, and that we're not going to be able to save. You're talking about 300 people.
Couldn't
basically
raid it and use it.
You
to
couldn't
save
raid
one.
It and save the teacher's plan. Mm-hmm. So, as a matter of principle, I understand people's frustration. As a matter of a solution to the broader problems, unfortunately, we just can't find the money there.
This note from Chris, he writes, the state must secure in the next budget the full actuarially required contribution plus additional funds to stabilize the KERS, K-E-R-S, non-hazardous and state police funds. To do otherwise jeopardizes pensions for thousands of Kentuckians who've earned and contributed to their futures. This includes many wonderful EKU employees.
Right. I mean, that's the issue. That's the thing that we should have been doing all along and that we must do, pay what's called the ARC, which just means the amount that we owe this year to pay off the long-term liability to the system over 30 years. If we don't do it, again, the problem compounds. We have to find that money. And you know, I think ultimately we're going to have to generate that money if we don't want to make big cuts to other services. But, you know, to let another 2 years go by without doing it is really doing a disservice to future Kentuckians and putting those pensions at risk at some point to those workers.
Stu Johnson?
John?
Yeah.
Yeah, John, I appreciate it. I guess I put this question to you, Jason, because it's been mentioned a couple of times probably now, or about at least the term tax reform. And again, that's an issue that's been over in Frankfurt for decades. But, you know, coming out of the 2008 recession, and I guess it's been a while back now, been a couple months ago that I spoke with Darrell Owens of Louisville lawmaker, and he said, you know, coming out of the recession, things are getting better economically. It will be a harder sell to move any kind of serious tax reform. And yet, Jason, I guess the question I'd have, would serious tax reform, how could that impact this pension issue?
Well, it could impact, of course, could impact the pension issue by generating more money. I mean, I think that, you know, the economy is getting better, but you look at the revenue forecast, we're talking about 3% growth in the first year of the budget, 2.6% the second year. It's not robust growth. That's very modest. And, you know, the reason is that we have this tax system that doesn't keep up with growth in the economy. So even though the economy is getting better, the tax system lags behind. So, you know, I don't think, and I don't agree with those people who suggest we're going to grow our way out of this problem, that if we just wait, the economy will improve. The economy, actually, the global economy is, you know, hitting some potholes now that we don't know where that's going to head. And so, you know, the question of a recession, another recession, is not if but when. Could be this year, could be 5 years from now. But we've actually gone through a long period now where we haven't had a recession. And when we do, we're in real serious problem. So I think it's a tough issue politically. I don't deny that. But you know, it's hard to see another way around it than looking at our tax code.
One final comment from a listener. Actually, it's a question. Wyatt writes to us, if repealing Kentucky's model of the Affordable Care Act doesn't pass during this assembly, then will it be at least 2 years before it gets repealed on account of the federal government's one-year notice? Jason, do you know the answer to that?
Well, I guess he's talking about Connect in that instance.
Yes.
And that's really the Governor Beshear created Connect by executive order. And so the legislature has never sort of had a hand in that. It's not clear if Governor Bevin puts notice within a year, less than a year's notice to the federal government, whether they'll go along with shifting to the federal exchange.
So it would not necessarily be tied to the legislative cycle.
It's not tied to the legislative cycle. Now, there are estimates that it would cost money to shut down Connect. So it's potentially part of the legislative process if money has to be appropriated to shut it down.
Gentlemen, we're out of time. Jason Bailey is executive director of the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy. Stu Johnson, WEKU reporter, has been with us from Frankfurt. Jack Brammer of the Lexington Herald Leader has been on the line with us and had to leave us earlier in the program. I do want to let listeners know that we'll be dealing on Eastern Standard at times with issues that come up during the General Assembly. Got a few months here. We're April or so, right? We're going to be at this until early April at least. And we're going to go over to Frankfurt as we've done the last couple of years at some point, some point in February. So stay with us for coverage of the General Assembly on Eastern Standard. Jason, Stu, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
This program was produced by Noah Day and with assistance from Logan Riley. Eastern Standard is a production of 88.9 WEKU and the WEKU stations. Write to us anytime, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com.